What we have found is certainly our members are stressed. They are trying to determine what their grant funding is, and yet their work with their students, their work in undergraduate research is kind of grounding them and getting them through every day, right? They are every day seeing the impact of their work on their students, and it is helping fuel them. And so Kerr is certainly trying to balance the realities of the attacks on higher education and research with creating a positive vibe in our community and not constantly trying to focus on the negatives. And so where can we use positive storytelling here? Where can we try and make a change?
This is Associations Thrive, the podcast celebrating successful associations and their leaders. I'm your host, Joanna Pineda, CEO and Chief Troublemaker at Matrix Group International. Listen in as top association executives tell all, revealing the creative and innovative ways they're increasing membership, generating revenue, nurturing engagement, and reimagining their organizations. By the way, if you've launched a new initiative, created new member services, or updated your governance structure and are seeing great results, I want to hear your story, and so do my listeners. I'd love to have you as a guest. Go to podcast.matrixgroup.net and apply to be on Associations Thrive. Now let's dive into this week's show. Today, I'm speaking with Lindsay Curry, Executive Officer of the Council on Undergraduate Research, or CUR. Lindsay, welcome back to Associations Thrive.
Thank you for having me, Joanna. I'm thrilled to be here.
Lindsay, you were on in October 2022. You were my very third guest. I am so happy to have you back. Thank you so much.
I have learned so much listening over the last 100 plus episodes, Joanna. So I'm so glad you're continuing to do this work and share the stories and learnings from all of the other executives and thought leaders out there. It's a really great resource and a nice little place to spend some time about the positivity happening in associations and learn from my peers.
Yeah, thank you. The storytelling has been really fulfilling. You know, for my listeners who don't know CUR and missed that episode, Lindsay, tell us about CUR.
The Council on Undergraduate Research is about 45 years old, and we have the pleasure of serving faculty and administrators at colleges and universities who are working to create research opportunities for their students because they believe in the power of undergraduate research, which we know has been proven to help students graduate on time, stay in their major, be better prepared for the workforce, be better prepared for graduate school. And one of the pieces we're really working on now is sharing the story about how they are better prepared to be civically engaged researchers in the environment, right? And so we really are sitting in a critical time in our country where we want to make sure that those that are going out and voting, those that are engaging in their communities, come with an inquiry-based mindset, that they're challenging the information that is being shared with them to be better citizens. And so that is just another added value as the story of undergraduate research unfolds and its long-term impact that we're focusing on these days.
Well, Lindsay, my son did a research project this past year, and he's doing another one next year. And I can tell the difference in how he presents himself and how he talks about the research and his studies. So it's been an amazing experience.
I love that you are learning it firsthand.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to participate in some undergraduate research myself. I didn't know what it was called at the time. I just thought it was really cool. I got to be in a research study where we were doing an archaeological dig at Edison's lab. I determined I did not want to be an archaeologist, which also was very helpful information, but I learned how to work on a team. I learned how to communicate the important pieces of the research. I learned how to present at conferences about this piece. And so these are all critical skills that adults need in the workforce, adults need in graduate school. I am certainly a product of undergraduate research and know what it really is through a lived experience, and just know that the more students that can get out of the classroom and that kind of lecture-based learning, how much more valuable a higher education experience can be for these students. And so Our work every day is to try and make sure as many students as possible have access to this high impact learning practice.
Well, Lindsay, speaking of access, this is a really tough environment for research at universities. How are your members doing?
Yeah, it certainly is. And it's interesting because it was one of the pieces that we considered when we were doing this strategic plan. So our strategic plan was up to end last year, and we made the critical decision. Our board and our association has been using Foresight for the last 6 years that I've been here. And we recognized, right, last year's election was really going to be one of those wild card events. And having spent enough time practicing Foresight, we knew that we wanted to see the outcome before we actually did this work. We wanted to see the outcome and impact on our organization, which we knew was going to be tremendous depending upon how that election ended. And certainly I'm glad that we made that decision at this point in time. And trying to balance the realities of the attacks on higher education, the attacks on science, the attacks on research, and the positivity that you want your community to have together as they move forward. And what we have found is certainly our members are stressed. They are trying to determine what their grant funding is. And yet their work with their students, their work in undergraduate research is kind of grounding them and getting them through every day, right? They are every day seeing the impact of their work on their students, and it is helping fuel them. And so Kerr is certainly trying to balance the realities of the attacks on higher education and research with creating a positive vibe in our community and not constantly trying to focus on the negatives. And so where can we use positive storytelling here? Where can we try and make a change? And use this as a reminder that this is why we want more civically engaged researchers out as adults. It only spurs the importance of the work we're doing. Because, right, if we had more civically engaged people, if we had more that understood the research process, would we be in a different point in time right now? And so it's just keeping us focused on right now what we're calling as Kerr 2030, which is the end of this strategic plan, but really well into the future and validating that Kerr does need to continue to exist, that this high impact research and teaching practice is essential and could be one of the solves for the environment we currently find ourselves in.
Well, let's talk about the strategic plan. So your strategic plan period, I guess, was ending, and you decided to embark on a new process. So I think a lot of my listeners are always really, really interested in this process. So tell us about what you went through as an organization.
Certainly, Joanna. I think there's a few threads that got us to a really successful strategic plan practice. One was the introduction of Foresight to our board culture 6 years ago. And I will say it wasn't always a smooth road, and Foresight work is not always easy work. But, you know, it started as a little drip, right? And we've been adding more and more of that practice into the work we've been doing over the last 6 years. So one, I think it critically changed how we approach this work, how we were thinking about the future and what a strategic plan needed to help us do. Certainly, we did not want it to be something that sat on a shelf. We wanted it to really be a guide and a grounding place for this board and future boards to use as a tool as we move forward. And the other piece is about 4 years ago, we brought a coach onto our board. Not to sit on our board, but to help work with our board. And at that point in time, it was really around our DEI work and how is the board doing this work? And we recognized it was critical and important to our values and aligned with our mission. And yet we were not experts in that space. And so this individual came into our board to help us do some of that work. And while doing that work, we really recognized the important impact of having a coach with the board. In addition to having your executive, we can only wear so many hats and sustain so many things that this was a beautiful scaffolding to the work I was doing with the board and gave somebody whose sole responsibility to the organization was to help us thread all of these pieces. And so doing those pieces of work together, this culture work, the DEI work, the Foresight work, I think brought us to a really impactful position where when we were looking at the strategic plan, we went from something that was certainly guiding us, but maybe not as strategic as we had hoped, not as grounded and focused as we had hoped, not as sophisticated as we had hoped. But that was the skill of the board and the organization at the point in time. And it certainly got us to where we are here. So it did do what it needed to do. And now we are ready for something that could challenge us a little bit more. And so all of these elements kind of fed in.
What does a board coach do? And what does this coaching look like?
Well, it's not the same every day, Joanna. I will say, when Sharon joined us 4 years ago and today, the work that she's doing with us is very different. But some of it is, at least for our organization, what is the work you're trying to do? What are you trying to accomplish? What are the resources, scaffolds, skills, and tools you need to get there? And 4 years ago, we were trying to move away from being a doing board, a board that was in the weeds, to a board that was much more strategic. And that is a hard road to go down. One, the weeds work, the how work usually is easiest for us to do. It is in a much more of our nature of doing the work than the thinking of the work and changing that culture and mindset. So what does your onboarding look like? What do your roles and responsibilities look like? What changes do you need to make in your nominations and leadership development committee to make sure you're getting the right people? How do you consistently live that higher work? So it included starting a board retreat practice, not just board meetings, but how are we thinking about and doing this work together? Professional development for the board. So what do we need to be reading? Who do we need to be listening to? What expertise do we need to come in? And to me, it was really a sophistication of the board recognizing, yes, our job is to be the guides for this organization, but that doesn't mean that we need to have every answer ourselves. We need to know how to ask for the data we need, the expertise we need. And that's actually a real sophistication and powerful change that we were able to go through of, we're not the experts on everything.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to be the experts on asking for what we need and listening to it and moving forward. And so our coach really helped us through changing the culture of the board to that more sophisticated strategic working. So it included changing the structure of our board meetings, changing the structure of our pre-reads, how often we meet and where and when. All of these pieces kind of played into that change. And we're not done yet. We always have the opportunity to learn and grow, and we're going to continue that road.
Lindsay, that is quite an investment. What happens when the board members turn over? How do you make sure that the next crop of board members embody the culture that you've created through this really intensive and intentional process? Like, what happens if I'm new?
Great questions, Joanna. So some of it is who we're recruiting and how we're recruiting them has changed significantly. And the sophistication of what we're looking for in our calls for board members, in addition to the rubrics review process on the back end. So we have gone in the last 5 years in a process where we used to have open nominations and open votes of our membership for board members. And we have shifted that process to very intentional recruitment, a very intense application process that is matching competencies that we need in our board to do this work, and an interview process that ensures that those competencies, both on paper and in the interview, can be met. And then we go through a really thoughtful onboarding process. Ooh, I skipped a step. It is now not an open vote from our members. That Nominations and Leadership Development Committee prepares a slate for our board. And so one, it has helped us recruit much higher level folks that maybe didn't want to risk in front of their friends or colleagues losing in an election. And so we are getting much higher quality and much more aligned candidates and applicants, because if you don't move forward, nobody knows that but the committee. And that is all closed door information.
Ah, interesting.
And so then the board just validates that, yes, these are the people we need. They have the competencies we need, and we are ready to go for the next year. And then we've created a really thoughtful and still evolving onboarding process where it includes several calls with myself, an onboarding with our coach and our president. We added on this board retreat and a board orientation. So our board members get reoriented together every year. It is not you learn about the roles that you have one time and you're expected to remember that through your 3 or 6 years on the board if you serve 1 or 2 terms, but that every year we're going to be looking about things differently. We're going to be talking about different things. And so what you might hear from our lawyer during that onboarding about fiduciary responsibility, you might hear something different in that year, or you might say, oh yeah, this is what we were talking about last year. And so we have really increased the onboarding. And then even for our board officers, we've continued to fine-tune what their onboarding looks like. So for years, we've been going to either exceptional boards or CEO symposium, which has been very valuable. We've now expanded it to not just the president-elect going, but our president-elect and our treasurer going together.
Wow.
Our treasurer is our first step in our presidential line so that they are creating a tight relationship and working on their plans together with me. We now have a full day planning meeting when they come in and work with the staff on aligning the operational plan and the strategic plan of the organization. They learn the staff. They create the calendar for the year. They work regularly with our coach. In addition to them working with the board, they're working with our president to ensure that they're feeling scaffolded, that we're working through all the pieces we need to. We want them to be successful. And so we are trying to prepare them and support them through the whole process.
Lindsay, let's turn to the strategic plan. What's new and different about this plan? What are you envisioning that's new and different?
Gosh, it's all different. First of all, we went from 5 goals to 3, really trying to fine tune what we're looking at. But also what we added this year were consistent threads. So we have 3 threads that roll through each goal. And one of the things that we had found in our last strategic plan was we had DEI as a strategic plan goal. And that was the level of sophistication we had at the time. We knew it was important. We wanted to state to the community it was very important. And what we recognize is it can't be a standalone. It needs to be threaded through all of the pieces that we do. And so that was one of the threads now. It's a focus of every one of the strategic plan goals. In our last plan, we had organizational accountability and sustainability as a standalone goal. Nope, that needs to be a priority of every one of our goals.
Oh.
That is a thread through each one. And the last thread is communication. No, we don't need to just communicate well with a single group. We need to be communicating well in a variety of platforms and a variety of community types. And so we have those 3 strong threads, broadening participation. We were trying to be thoughtful and supportive of our community where DEI is sometimes at some of our institutions, words that have eliminated people being able to sit on those committees or do that work. And so we're going to hold true to our values, but make it so as many people as possible can participate in those that work. And so we're not stopping the work we're doing.
Are you calling it something different? What are you calling it now?
We are calling it broadening participation.
Which is what it is.
Which is exactly what it is. And we did go through, again, over the last year, a really deep exercise of defining what DEI means for our organization. And so we will be leveraging those definitions in that broadening participation work, but it makes it more accessible for all of our members to be able to participate in the learning, in the strategy, and the execution of that work. We don't want web crawlers getting our members for sitting on a committee or those sorts of things. And so we really prioritize the participation and the value over the acronym for our group at this point in time. It was a hard decision to make, but we said, you know, if we are prioritizing inclusivity, we need to make sure that we can actually have all the voices participate.
Lindsay, what are the 3 core areas of the new plan?
So the 3 core areas are all focused around different communities that we think are critical to the success of undergraduate research. So the first one is empowering the undergraduate research community. That's our first goal. Our goals are beautifully depicted in a triangle, and that is the base of our triangle. So our community is our base. Are we fostering professional growth, collaboration, and long-term impact amongst our members? Our second goal is driving excellence and innovation in undergraduate research. And so this is building on the group that is our members, and it is expanding it to their institutions as a whole, the wider higher education community, and ensuring that people are using and seeing her as the expert on undergraduate research. So using our data, using our standards, using our resources, and that we are celebrating the excellence in the community much more broadly. And so that there's more recognition about the impact of undergraduate research on college campuses, at professional societies, much more broadly. And the third arm of that triangle is elevating undergraduate research. And this really ties to our advocacy work, which is at the federal level and beyond. So really focusing what advocacy means for this organization right now is certainly at the governmental level, but also in communities with family and friends that are supporting students that are going. We are finding in this current environment, families are key decision makers in our students' decisions about what classes they're going to take, where they're going to put their time and resources, what is their second job going to look like. And we need to make sure they understand what their student participating in undergraduate research impact is going to be, as much as we need our federal policymakers to understand why it's so important to support research. And so we are broadening what advocacy looks like for undergraduate research in this new plan.
Lindsay, how are you disseminating the new plan to the entire membership and activating them to support it? Because that's a big job.
It sure is. We actually just came back from our annual leadership meeting, which is where our 300 elected volunteers, which includes our board and our council and our disciplinary representatives. And we actually launched it with them first. They actually were critical in the research piece, as were our broader membership, but they are critical to this organization and how we implement programs, how we develop content. And we needed them to be key partners in this work. And we needed them to feel it and own it. And so we did a half-day workshop before our conference started this June for them to get deep and dirty in the plan with us. And so we did a full presentation, and then we had an afternoon workshop where they could start working on, gosh, how are they going to be part of the plan? Where do they see their ownership? What are their roles and responsibilities going to be? And then we're working over the course of the summer to compile those ideas, start creating plans, and then we are going to launch it to our broader membership this fall. We also recognize the rhythm of academia. Launching something in the summer would not have been ideal anyway. So we're using this as critical work time, and we'll be launching it to our community and much more broadly this fall. So making sure our members know what it is. We're going to have certainly a landing page. We're going to have videos. We're going to be leveraging social media and our e-newsletter. So kind of a full court press communication plan for it. But then also working on talking to our partner associations and our representatives and all of the key folks that we have relationships with and work with, letting them know what we're going to be doing, what we're going to be working on, letting them know that we have a place for them to do this work with us if they're interested, and help us spread this message as we move forward.
Man, I love this. You're activating the leadership, and then they're going to activate the membership. Wow.
We all have to own it.
Absolutely. Lindsay, it's clear that we're going to have you back to talk about the strategic plan moving forward. But before we go, I want to talk to you about a couple of your volunteer activities, because on top of doing all this work for CUR and working on the governance of CUR, you're vice chair of the Executive Management Committee for ASAE, and you've just been named a senior fellow at the Murdoch Charitable Trust. First of all, where do you find time for all this? And talk to us about these activities, because they sound like amazing opportunities.
Oh, thank you, Joanna. Gosh, I feel so deeply in the privilege that it is to work in the association space, that our job is really to make the world better through community. And to me, I want to also do it myself. I've told anybody that has worked for me for years now, if you're going to work with volunteers, you need to be one.
Yes.
Because you need to know what rolling up your sleeves looks like, what the pain of structures can be, and how to do it better. So one, I am doing it because I am not only able to give back, which is certainly a gift to the professions that have given me so much, but also, gosh, I think it helps me do my job so much better. So I see this as critical learning every day, Joanna, like going and serving on EMAC. I am learning from 24 other executives constantly what's going on in their world. How are they solving for this? And then we have the privilege of then bringing it more broadly to the association community of, here's what 24 people have learned. Take it, run with it. Maybe it will help you or relieve some pain of the things you're doing. And then my work with the trust, I think, is such a beautiful merging of the association space and the higher ed space that I have the gift of working in. Murdoch Charitable Trust is a $1 billion endowment that every year focuses on enriching community, enriching associations, and enriching scientific ventures. And I'll be working with the team there that is determining where they're going to put funds into the science field in the next 3 to 5 years, and
wow,
what the science funding need to look like as the world is shifting. And so, gosh, I think some days I'm going to get more from them than they're going to get from me. But thinking about, what does the future of research funding look like? What does the future of research look like on college campuses, in communities? We have a lot of opportunity to innovate and be creative. Might be a challenging time, but it is a time for us to really benefit from the shakeup and think about how we do things differently. And so being able to be in that space and learning from colleagues that are doing this work, and along with giving back to those that do so much and have done so much for me, is great. So I see it as a way to constantly be learning. I think you get to a point in your career where sometimes sitting in a session at a conference isn't the right kind of learning anymore. And I work at an association that thinks about learning through doing, and I'm trying to practice that every day.
Lindsay, I bet that the Murdoch Charitable Trust is going to really benefit from your experience clearly with all the researchers, but also your foresight experience.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have to help them navigate, what does research look like on college campuses? And as the federal government is doing whatever it is that it's doing or not doing, the private giving is going to become probably more prominent. You know, in my work with other foundations, often they'll say, we don't just want to give money to this organization or to this cause or to this issue. We want to activate other funders so that we can really bring a lot of resources to bear on this problem. So that's what you're going to be doing at the Murdoch Charitable Trust. Amazing.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that work.
Well, Lindsay, it is always a pleasure to talk to you. I could talk to you all day, but I know that you have other things to do on a Friday afternoon. So I'm going to have you back because I want to hear about how you proceed with the strategic plan and how the rollout goes.
I can't wait. And that just means, Joanna, that you're going to have 150 more successful episodes.
Oh, 100%.
Thanks for listening to Associations Thrive. We're so glad to have you here. You know, my personal mission and the mission of my company, Matrix Group International, is to help associations and nonprofits increase membership, generate revenue, and thrive in the digital space. I want to hear stories of how your organization is thriving in today's challenging landscape. Please apply to be on my show by going to podcast.matrixgroup.net. By the way, do you need help with a digital initiative? Maybe it's a website redesign, a new membership database, or a hybrid meeting that you're planning. I'd love to connect with you. Please visit the Matrix Group website at matrixgroup.net. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Associations Thrive. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a comment, and share it with your colleagues and friends.